This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Verwandle deine Leidenschaft mit Shopify in ein Business und knack Umsatzrekorde mit dem Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Du hast richtig gehört. Der Checkout mit der weltweit besten Conversion. Der legendäre Checkout von Shopify vereinfacht das Shoppen auf deiner Website bis hin zu Social Media und überall dazwischen. Na, das ist Musik für deine Ohren. Wie du es auch drehst und wendest, mit Shopify kannst du zu einem echten Hit werden. Starte deinen Test noch heute für nur einen Euro pro Monat auf shopify.de/rekorde.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio and on BBC Sounds. This is The Stephen Nolan Show!
Exterminate! The team coming after me. They've been after me for a while now. The Nolan team, exterminate. Well, this about... Am I for real? Is this the real Stephen Nolan sitting here? Or is this an AI replica of me? Why is this story important today? Thompson at the newsletter... I don't know if it's the real Thompson, the robotic Thompson, but he has a story on the front page, Northern Ireland Civil Service set for robot cleaners. And if some of the cleaners' work is being replaced, it just opens up that whole discussion. What about the special advisors? What about the suits within Stormont? And then you take it outside Stormont. How much could robots do to replace all of us in the name of efficiency and pump that money into where it's actually really needed? Or is creating jobs a real need and a proper use of money? All coming up on the programme this morning.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning, everyone. Welcome along to the programme at 6 minutes past nine to the Nolan Show from the BBC. More robots are on the way to Stormont, to the department run by the Sinn Féin minister, John O'Dowd. So are the robots going to replace any of the work being done by the 90 grand a year special advisors? No. How about the politicians? How about AI replacing the thinking of the politicians? Or indeed some of the researchers, sometimes the family members of politicians. Are they being replaced by the robots? Is AI going to get in there and start to reduce costs there? No. How about the consultants, where hundreds of thousands, if not millions of pounds, is spent on lots and lots of consultants advising your politicians? Not a bit of it. Who is being targeted by the robots? Who? You got it. The lowest paid cleaners. Low paid workers are facing redundancies. This is Thompson's story, David Thompson's story, front page newsletter today. Reduced hours across 162 sites by a company contracted by the Department of Finance. Jobs are under threat. Cleaning, security, catering staff in civil service buildings have been outsourced to private companies that could see staff facing a 60% cut in hours. The plans would see some staff replaced by robotic vacuum cleaners. The trade union NIPSA with us this morning, represented by Ryan Wilson. Good morning, Ryan.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And the businessman, Frank Shivers. Good morning, Frank.
Morning, Stephen.
Well, whether we like it or not, Ryan, if government, if one of its purposes should be to save money, maybe the robots can do what the cleaners can do and maybe it'll be cheaper.
Stephen, let's be clear what's happening here. You know, this contract will be funded by tens of millions of pounds of public money, and instead of that money going into wages to support local workers and communities, there's proposals on the table to cut 1,535 cleaning hours per week across 162 sites. You know, that's going to mean fewer staff being asked to do more work while robots and automation are brought in to replace them. And the example you'd said at about the 300 hours or the 60%, Castle Buildings, which is the Department of Health headquarters, they currently have 300 hours cleaning per week. The proposal's on the table to slash that by 175 hours. Yeah, that's a 60% cut. And to replace them, to place some of that work there, they're proposing two robot cleaners to be introduced. Like, how can anybody expect the same level of cleanliness, the same hygiene standards, when over half the hours are gone and the workers get supplemented by machines instead of human workers. That's just one example.
Is it called efficiency?
Well, you know,
don't we expect efficiency from government?
Well, if this was efficiency, we wouldn't be talking about it. We would be talking about improving standards, you know, not slashing over 1,500 cleaning hours a week, you know. It cuts standards, you know, it piles on impossible workloads on the fewer staff. Efficiency should mean better services.
But how does it if the robots are doing it? And,
pardon, Stephen?
How does it if the robots are doing it?
Like, Stephen, these robots are currently operating as dormant. My understanding is that a cleaner has to accompany the robot around that building because it can't clean around the edges.
And I understand at the moment.
It operates very slowly. So you're paying somebody to stand alongside a robot and clean the bits it can't. How does that save the public purse money or sound more efficient?
And where are you getting these figures from, the 60% cut in hours? Has this been communicated to the unions?
Yeah, so Aramark, the company who has won the contract, has been entered into consultation with the recognised union, NIPSA and GMB, and have shared documentations on their proposals to cut hours across 162 sites.
And and you're now in consultation about that?
We're now in consultation about that there, but it's been made clear to us that they want these changes in before the contract start date, which is the 1st of April this year.
And is it cutting hours or is it redundancies, Ryan?
It's going to be a combination of both, Stephen. From what I've initial proposals on the table have been reported back from our members is that Castle Buildings, as an example, one of staff being made redundant, and the remaining staff who currently have contracts for 35 hours, some of them have 30-hour contracts, they're all been told that they're all been cut down to 20 hours and the two robots are going to be put in place.
Frank Shivers?
Stephen, I can't believe there's such a surprise about this. If you continually drive up costs for businesses and look for efficiencies through cutting contract hours and cut contracted contracts, this is what you're going to get, and be prepared for a lot more of it, because in the private sector we're looking at every angle to keep our business going, and AI is the next thing that's coming down the road.
But
I also find it strange, Stephen, I'm confused as to what the unions want. They're continually on saying, let's cut to a four-day week, let's cut down people's working week. And when things like AI come in to allow that to happen, then they're up in arms. We're slightly confused from the public sector as to what to do for the right.
That's for you, Ryan, isn't it?
So in terms of Frank is confused about so unions wanting in terms of their workers to be treated fairly and not to see hundreds of primarily female workers being sent to the dole queues. I mean, how is that going to stimulate the local economy? This money, this is tens of millions of pounds of public money. You know, Aramark's not a charity. They have shareholders. They do it for profits. And instead of that money that the public purse is going to be paying out, we'll pay out. It'll go to buying robots, local shops and businesses, people that Frank speaking up about, they're going to be the ones that are going to be impacted by this as well. So
we're
in everybody's
impacted.
Interest in
sorry,
jobs.
Sorry, we're already impacted. I mean, people need to wake up. Our politicians need to wake up. The unions need to wake up. The private sector have been telling you for years and years that we're continually increasing wages, the cost of doing business is increasing, energy costs have gone up. In April, I mean, we're on the edge of a cliff here. In April, the hospitality industry is going to be devastated. The retail industry is going to be devastated. We have costs that just don't add up. And to be honest, in regards to government contracts, in the private sector, you take on a government contract for turnover. You don't take it on for profit because they squeeze you that much. So Aramark are being squeezed with the increase in national insurance contributions. They're probably being, all sorts of the increase in basic minimum
wage. Have you seen their profits, Frank?
Yeah, but I guarantee it's not from that contract.
Well, how do you know that? What's the contract worth? What's the profit margin?
Well, I don't know the ins and outs.
How can you guarantee it then?
because I was working for a company at a time when that was tendered for, and when we looked at it, we decided, no, we weren't going to go for it. And it's quite obvious in a lot of government contracts that they squeeze you quite hard. And as I say, private sector would tend to take those on for turnover.
The question that we've asked at the top of our programme this morning is why is the Borg coming in to replace the work of the cleaners? Do the suits get away scot-free? So that no AI initiative can replace the suits? I'm not saying it should, but isn't it interesting that it seems to be here, the people at the very bottom? What about the consultants? I said the special advisors were on 90 grand a year. I think it's 82 grand that they're on. What about them?
But Stephen, that's
can we not cut down the work of them if it's all about efficiency?
Absolutely, and we should be.
Should
we? Look at the private,
we should be replacing absolutely. Human beings with robots.
That is what we're coming to. If you look at the AI industry at the moment, it's on a boom and it's only going one trajectory, and that's up.
Well,
so when you look at businesses and their marketing departments, you know they are cutting back in the marketing department because they're using AI tools like ChatGPT.
But should they? And should this go uncontested? There needs to be a discussion in this country about it. And Minister John O'Dowd from Sinn Féin, now he it's his department that this is happening within. And Mr. O'Dowd is essentially saying that this has nothing to do with him. Spokesperson for the Department of Finance, they haven't got back to us finance yet, but they've told Thompson in the newsletter the following: the finance minister has no role in the award or delivery of contracts. But what John hasn't done is express an opinion. He is a minister. How does a Sinn Féin minister feel about low-paid cleaners being replaced with robots? Does Sinn Féin have any opinion on it, given it's their minister that leads the Department of Finance? Norman, you've called us on this today. Morning to you.
Morning, Stephen. Stephen, it's unbelievable. Any time there's cuts, it's always the low-paid workers get hit. These MLAs and all their advisors are all untouchable. Why do they need advisors? Can they not think for themselves that they have to get somebody to advise them? Nobody advises me how to run my home, so they don't know how to do anything that they need to do. I have to think for myself.
Well, most democracies, most administrations in the world, across the world, have advisors to the politicians, and it's to try to deliver the best possible service for you.
Why do they need advisors? Can they not think for themselves? And all these consultants running about with clipboards, costing hundreds of millions of pounds a year, they ask people questions in the street. And all these north-south bodies, all these committees and quangos that set up. Well, maybe they need to look at all that if they want to save money. Instead of tackling the low-paid workers all the time and the low-paid families with water rates and everything, when it comes to doing anything, it's always the low-paid workers that get hit with water rates and everything.
Ron Wilson, just spell out the figures you know in terms of what impact this may have.
So looking at the number of sites involved, we have figures for 162 of them. The overall proposal is per week 1,535 cleaning hours per week is going to be cut off them 162 sites. I'd cited Castle Buildings earlier. It has the proposal of cutting it by 175 hours a week. There's 9 cleaners in that building. It's a big building, if anybody's ever seen it. It's hard enough in terms of the work that's there at the minute. Across a number of government sites, we've seen likes of Clare House, which I believe the Department of Finance are in. There's a proposal there to cut it by 45 hours per week. Department for Economy, their headquarters has been proposed to be cut by 40 hours per week. And the MOT centres, all of them are proposed to have cuts across the board.
To be replaced by the robots?
Not all sites.
Expanding beyond cleaners?
Well, this is primarily in terms of affecting the cleaners. It's the cleaning contract. A number of these sites, the vast majority of sites, don't have in terms of catering. Some of them have porter services. They'll not be affected. But in respect of cleaners, all these are being proposed will directly in terms of impact cleaners.
Big Barbara. Good morning, Big Barbara.
Good morning, Stephen. I'm just listening here, and I think it is ridiculous bringing in robots to do jobs of poor people.
Well, you say that, and then we ask questions about where government is, why they're not being efficient enough, why they're not saving money everywhere they can. So can you have it both ways?
Well, Stephen, let me tell you this, dear. I'm really cross today over this. Those politicians up on the big hill, let them do their work instead of robots. Let them do their cleaning themselves and cut their wages. If you look at thinking about that, they should put me up there at in Fifth Stormont.
The food is subsidised at Stormont. It's a story that we have done on a number of occasions in the past here on the Nolan Show. You cannot argue that there shouldn't that there is waste in government and then start to not even contemplate whether money could be saved here. Of course, Ron Wilson, that is another question. Do we actually know that there will be a net saving of money, or is the contract of a particular value going to Aramac?
Aramac.
So do we actually know if any public money is being saved here?
I think absolutely not. Like, the wage has been cut from this contract. You know, it's not going back into the public purse. You know, it's going into Aramark's profits.
That's a nonsense. Okay, Aramark, in the 1st of April, basically for every worker will get an average of £2,500 increase, annual increase on their national insurance contributions. Not to mention the increase in the basic minimum wage and the additional costs.
That's costs you're talking about. Where are you getting? How do you know how much Aramac's making out of this? You don't.
I don't. Well, no. What I'm saying is, and if you look, Stephen, what the average person working full time on basic minimum wage, it's costing an employer £2,500 additional costs for the increase in national insurance that the Labour government are bringing in the 1st of April. That's fact. That all the trade bodies have come up with that.
Here's what Aramac have told them.
Can I just say, these companies are open to bid on an open tender basis for these contracts. They can include, in terms of when they're calculating their costs, they can factor all that in. Whenever they were bidding for that, they were well aware of when that tender was out. Should have been aware of any, in terms of increased costs.
I'm trying to understand why the Department of Finance haven't got back to us this morning with John O'Dowd's position on this. What is Mr. O'Dowd, Minister O'Dowd's position on human beings, some of the lowest paid in Northern Ireland, being replaced, their work being replaced by robots? I'll read the full statement that's contained in this newsletter article. The Finance Minister has no role in the award or delivery of contracts. The Northern Civil Service cleaning contract must meet a specified standard in accordance with the terms and conditions of the contract, which includes payment of the real living wage. Well, you don't pay a robot, do you? So within those terms and conditions, why, Minister, did you not stipulate that robots cannot replace some of the people that will live where you live, John, that will live among the electorate that you live? And you wouldn't have been the minister then, but you can do something about it now if you want to. Or, Mr. O'Dowd, you can put your head above the parapet and you can say, do you know what? This money might be diverted into health. This money that would be saved might be diverted into education and our roads, and so it goes on. And this is the way to go. What is the minister's view on this? Maliki and Ahagallan. Morning, Maliki.
Hi, Stephen.
Did I read that? I didn't read that Aramac statement. They've been in touch with the Nolan Show. This is the company that's bringing in the robots. At Aramac, they say, we're committed to providing our clients with the best possible solutions for their business needs. As we see various advances in technologies and AI, our cleaning services can, in some cases, incorporate cobotics and various other innovative solutions, cobotics. These technologies work alongside our team, not in isolation, to create more efficient ways of working while also offering enhanced environmental benefits. However, similar to other industries, these advancements in technology may impact the way in which our teams have traditionally worked. Guess what? It then continues. Our priority has and continues to be open and transparent communication with all stakeholders. We've proactively reached out to relevant unions and continue to work alongside them. We're currently working through all relevant sites to communicate closely with our colleagues via a comprehensive consultation process. The well-being of our colleagues remains a top priority for us as we work through this process. So, Malachy, just give me a second here. So this is this company, and they actually put into their statement that their priority is to be open and transparent, right? And yet they duck the question that we ask them. Are there plans to reduce workers' hours with increased use of robots? What areas could be affected? What jobs are affected? And they say they're being transparent and then duck telling the public where they're going to do this. Then we put to this company that is it true, as has been reported in the newsletter, that the Stormont Estate is facing a 60% cut in hours in terms of specifically the Department of Health's Castle building in the Stormont Estate. Guess what this, quote, open and transparent company does? Ducks the question. We asked, is it correct that 1,535 hours per week is going to be reduced? They try to tell you they've been open and transparent and duck the question. Go ahead, Malachy.
I can't really see where the cost saving would be, because if you pay all the cleaners off and replace them with the robots, well then all them cleaners, they're going to have to get unemployment benefit. Instead of being, you know, a productive member of society and contributing to the economy, they become a drain.
Doesn't make sense. But Malachy, is this not where we're at in the world?
Well, it probably is, but at the end of the day, where's it going to end up?
Like, are many people that maybe, you know, went out and did the gardening themselves, obviously this isn't about employment, but they now have a robotic garden, little device like that. We've got technology all over our homes now, don't we?
Well, we do, but it's not always for the better.
Malachy, thank you. Dee? Good morning, Dee.
Good morning, Stephen. I'm ringing regarding the new income tax that the people are going to be paying. Sorry, national insurance. I'm sure robots don't have to pay that. So all that money that they should be gathering for the government, I know it's going to be the British government, but it will go back to the pockets of Northern Ireland eventually. It's so lost.
Do you support this or not?
Oh, no, I think it's dreadful. These robots, can they dust? Can they do cobwebs? And they're expecting that from robots and maybe one person looking after heaven knows how many.
Well, they're saying there's cleaners working with them, but they're reducing the hours of the cleaners.
Of course they are. And
here's a statement.
What can the cleaners do?
Here's a statement then from the Department of Finance. Why wasn't this written by AI? Why did a human being write this statement? How do we know it wasn't? Is the whole press department within the Department of Finance going to be turned into robotic machines? Is Minister O'Dowd going to become an AI? What do you call that thing with the avatar? Mr. O'Dowd be replaced by an avatar? Where does this end? Or is this efficiency? Frank Shivers. Sorry, the statement that's in from Department of Finance to the Nolan Show. Decisions in relation to the workforce are taken by the contractor. The department will continue to engage with trade unions and the contractor in relation to these matters. What is Minister O'Dowd's position? I'll say it again. What is his position on human beings being replaced by robots? And it might be that John rightly says, we've got to do this so we can have more money. But saying nothing about his opinion, is that tenable? Go ahead, Frank.
Stephen, I think it's important to say, you know, I'm certainly from my perspective, personal perspective, I'm very wary of AI. But when you have sort of, you know, I speak to various businesses and, you know, you get sort of manufacturers saying, I can get an automatic welding machine for £200,000 and I'm paying a welder £50,000 a year. It makes economic sense. And the private sector don't have the luxury of going to Westminster saying, oh, I've overspent my budget this year, write me a cheque from Westminster. They just close down, and what happens is then everybody loses their job, and there's no workers' hours, and there's no money. So, you know, I can't blame Aramark for looking for solutions to keep the business afloat and to keep that contract profitable.
But Frank, is it not a red herring to pin this all on Aramark? They're a commercial company attempting to make profit and win contracts.
You're the one that's pinning it on Aramark. No, I'm not.
This story is not about Aramark. This story this morning is about having a public discussion and government joining in to that public discussion about where do you draw the line between efficiency and human jobs. It's such an important conversation.
Stephen, I don't know where they've been. They've been hiding in a cupboard because we've been talking about it for a decade now.
Well, here it is rolling out.
But that's what makes me, you know, I'm surprised that the unions are coming out. You know, we've been talking about this for 10 years.
Here's Bill in Belfast. Morning, Bill.
Good morning, Stephen. I'd like to talk about Robbie the robot. The robot?
Are you giving the robots a name now?
Oh, yes, you have to.
One of the key questions up at Stormont will be, will these be cross-community robots? Will there be an equal number of Catholic and Protestant robots?
I would say there have to be. But how does a robot get up a set of steps to clean the top of a filing cabinet? How does it get into the office to arrange and tidy the desk before they start polishing the table?
Well, this is why they're...
Most of all, how do they go into the ladies and gents' toilets to sanitise them and replace things that need replaced?
Well, this is probably why the robots are not working in isolation. They're working at the moment with humans.
Yes, because they can't go up ladders or step ladders.
It's only a matter of time until they can.
But I'd like to see the ones that they have on the television go up and down steps.
Yeah.
Will they go up there? Have the arms on them to stretch out to clean the top of these filing cabinets? Can they go into the ladies and gents' toilet and see what's missing and replace it?
This is a bigger conversation, Bill, right? Than what can robots currently do? Because you look at self-driving cars, you couldn't have imagined that a few years ago, right?
Why not?
So the technology will advance. What this is about this morning is they're starting to think and have a public discussion around where do, in terms of our public services, in terms of, you know, the public service in Northern Ireland is one of the biggest employers, if not the biggest employer in Northern Ireland. So where do we draw the line and say, yes, a robot can do it better, but no, we're not allowing it to happen because human beings need jobs.
The personal touch. Well, listen, why did they not start with, say, the spas? Because I'm sure a computer can do a better job than them. Or else the researchers. I like that job now. That's a nice job, researchers. And if you look at the new contract for the new hospital, I think there's $275 million for consultants. I wonder how many cleaners I could pay.
I haven't seen that figure. I'd need to check it. Bill, thank
you. It was in the tally. You check it.
Well, I need to check it. I haven't seen it. Thank you, Bill. Frank, thank you. Ryan Wilson, can I ask this? Where on the agenda is this in terms of the broader picture of unions accepting efficiency and robotic machines against human jobs? And are you considering strike action over this or not? I notice the department telling the Rolling Show this morning they're going to continue to engage with trade unions. Have they engaged much?
Well, look, Stephen, nothing's off the table. You know, some of your callers have picked up on the things that robots can't do in terms of posing the question, you know, like, can they open doors, can they go up stairs and stuff? And the reality is, no, they can't. You're going to require a cleaner to go, you know, in front of them or behind them to do these things. And when those are on the table to expect in terms of cleaners to operate with 60% less hours in some areas and to also be doing their own work and chasing after robots that can't open the door and can't go under desks and stuff.
Right.
But no, yeah.
Ryan, thank you very much. Thank you, sir. Frank, thank you. I think we've had a last-minute statement in from all the political parties collectively in Northern Ireland about whether robots should take over from me. I think they have a message for me. Exterminate! Here comes the news at 9:33. Now, next this morning, the family of a victim of IRA man, Brendan Bick McFarlane, have told the Nolan Show they're distraught after Celtic fans celebrated the Republican's life at a match on Tuesday night. A banner which paid tribute to Brendan McFarlane was unfurled by fans ahead of Tuesday's Scottish Premiership match against Aberdeen. It described them as a hero. He was jailed in 1976 for his part in a gun and bomb attack on the Bayardo Bar in Belfast, in which five people were killed. The DUP MP, Gregory Campbell, has tabled a motion at Westminster raising concerns over the banner and has called on those Celtic supporters involved to be dealt with by the club and the law. We've asked Celtic Football Club for a comment. We haven't heard back from them. David has contacted the Nolan Show. His relative was murdered in the Bayardo Bar on the Shankill Road. Good morning, David.
Morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm okay, thank you. Tell me about your relative, David.
My relative was killed in 1975 outside of the Bayardo Bar in Belfast. He was not in the bar. He was one of the innocent bystanders standing outside when McFarland pulled up. He riddled both the people standing outside from the depot, then went on to plant the bomb in the Bayardo Bar.
And Bick McFarlane, he shot outside the bar. He shot a gun outside the bar and he planted the bomb.
He did.
So how do you feel about him being lauded and celebrated?
I think it's absolutely disgusting. First of all, by Celtic for allowing this to happen. Bick McFarlane was certainly no hero. In my opinion, he was just a murdering thug. And for Celtic to allow this to happen, and then afterwards, which made it even worse, was the disgraceful public commentary from Sinn Féin about it. One of their former MPs, Alicia McCallion, she stated on her social media that this is why she loves Celtic FC and it was a privilege to know Bick. I just find that absolutely sickening.
Well, look, it's... Can you tell me more about your relative and what happened to him?
He lived in that part of Belfast. He had no involvement whatsoever in any paramilitary groups. He was not sectarian whatsoever. He had went out to take a late night walk before going to bed. He'd walked up towards the bar, and as far as I know, his friend was a doorman at the bar that night, and he was having a chat with him whenever the car pulled up, and McFarlane then murdered him.
And how do you get your head around, look, you know the different voices, you know the different angles and the different interpretations in Northern Ireland. It's part and parcel of Northern Ireland, isn't it? The likes of Gerry Adams, the likes of Gerry Kelly, very much celebrating Bick McFarlane's life. And in this society, David, there will be people who very much say, you've got to be able to remember your friends, your colleagues and the dead in this complicated political place.
I fully understand that. And as I say, this happened 50 years ago. And on the subject of Gerry Adams, Gerry Adams has been quoted as saying that McFarlane never had a sectarian bone in his body, which makes it even worse and harder to stomach, to be honest, because if he didn't have a sectarian bone in his body, was he just a callous, cold-blooded murderer that done this? And I understand, yes, that they are mourning their friends, but to do it so disgustingly over social media, it's sickening.
Well, what do you think Celtic should be doing?
Celtic should be definitely taking some action. I know it will be hard to pinpoint the fans who brought the banner in, but like, it wasn't a small banner, it was a large, large banner. And there should be some action taken against the club, I think, for allowing this to happen. And it would be the same. This is nothing about Scottish football, about Rangers or Celtic, because if Rangers fans had done it, I would have felt equally as disgusted. It's just the way the whole thing was done. The way Bick McFarlane's death has been glorified this past week has been disgraceful.
Like, there's a family grieving, David, at the moment.
I understand that, yeah, but there's also a lot more families grieving, the victims of the Bayardo bombing.
So, his, yeah. It's back to
Stephen, my mother is 87 now, and she now suffers Alzheimer's. She can barely remember her family members' names, but she can tell you to this day who Brett and Dick McFarland is. It's ingrained in her memory.
Like you, when you look at, you know, the family of Mr. McFarland grieving now, David, right? And last night, Rangers fans held up a banner saying he was a card then and he's a card now. Rotten hell, Brendan McFarlane. Should that equally be condemned?
Of course it should. It should absolutely be condemned. As I say, I would have a problem with Rangers fans doing anything as much as Celtic fans. And no, that shouldn't have been done. They should have let it lie and just let show Celtic and their supporters for what they are.
It's where we go in this society, isn't it? It's how we square this circle of accommodating all of the different political views. And it raises its head when someone dies.
It absolutely does, yes. Yeah.
What effect did this have on your family when your relative was killed?
It's brought back memories from 50 years ago. And one of my concerns is now the 50th anniversary of the bombing will be this August. Are Sinn Féin going to come back out again of their holes and glorify the whole thing again and glorify Dick McFarland again on the 50th anniversary?
David, thank you. 030 30 80 55 55. If you want to pick up the phone to us this morning, the DUP MLA, Philip Brett, has been talking to us about this. And I began by asking Philip what the DUP thinks about the banner being displayed at Celtic Football Club by fans.
Like most people across Northern Ireland, we're absolutely appalled by the fact that there was a public display of tribute to a man who blew the heart out of my constituency and caused untold damage and hurt to people right across Northern Ireland. The fact that some people think that this man is a hero is just incomprehensible. And we're calling for clear action and clear leadership from Celtic Football Club on this issue.
Well, you say that, but you're working with your partners in government. Sinn Féin, the First Minister, said there was no alternative to some violence in the past. You know that Gerry Kelly, again, another prominent member of Sinn Féin, was paying tribute to Bic McFarlane, and they see him as a hero.
And I, in the Assembly on Monday, Stephen, was very clear that Mr. McFarlane was not a hero. He was a cold-blooded sectarian killer. And I was very clear in the Assembly on Monday that Sinn Féin's attempt to eulogise and to rewrite the past will never be accepted by my party and, in my view, the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland. And I asked Sinn Féin the question and was met with silence. What was heroic about murdering a 17-year-old innocent girl?
But this is, again, yet another reminder of the two different narratives, the two different approaches in Northern Ireland, and whether, Philip, the DUP is going to accept that a large part of the political community in Northern Ireland, the nationalist Republican community, want to remember their dead.
The point that I made, Stephen, on Monday was that I understand that family have lost a loved one in this death, and I will never criticise that. What I will criticise is any attempt to whitewash the past. I don't think that it's acceptable, and I don't think the vast majority of people in Northern Ireland think it's acceptable to say that the murder of a 17-year-old girl was a heroic or patriotic act, like Sinn Féin described. And that this party, and I don't think any other party in Northern Ireland, with the exception of Sinn Féin, think that that is the case.
So what are you going to do about it?
What I'm going to do is continue to stand with innocent victims across Northern Ireland. I stood up on Monday in the Northern Ireland Assembly and challenged Sinn Féin to explain to the people of Northern Ireland what was heroic about what Mr. McFarland done. I will take every opportunity to be on the side of victims, and I'll continue to call out the utter hypocrisy of Sinn Féin on this issue.
Remind us what he did.
What Mr. McFarland did is a long litany of crimes. He planted a bomb on the Shankill Road, which killed...
That was 75, wasn't it? 1975.
Yeah. which killed 5 people and injured over 50 people. He then, alongside Jerry Kelly, masterminded the escape from the Mays prison, which resulted in the death of a prison officer. He then was responsible for the kidnap of a supermarket executive in the Republic of Ireland, which led then to the death of 2 further members of the Irish Security Services. So that is the history of Mr. McFarlane. That's what Sinn Féin tried to hide, but that's what I have been very clear in calling out and in challenging.
Although you had members of you had Celtic fans, didn't you, paying tribute to him, why do you think so many people, Philip, wanted to do that?
Well, I think because what we've seen over the weekend was an attempt by Sinn Féin to rewrite the past of what Mr. McFarlane's actions were. I don't think the vast majority of those who were involved in this incident recognise or realise what Mr. McFarlane done, because they see from their political leaders descriptions from Mr. Kelly and from Mary Lou McDonald calling him a hero and a patriot. And that's why I think it's vital that I and others in leadership positions take every opportunity to point out the clear disgraceful actions that Mr. McFarlane were involved in.
But my point is, you cannot link. Like, obviously, Sinn Féin have been issuing tributes. There's no surprise there to pick McFarlane. But my question to you is, why do you think so many people who are not Sinn Féin, not in political parties, wanted to put that banner up at the Celtic game? Look at how many people it must have taken to bring that in, organise it, get it printed. They said he was a rebel then, he's a hero now, was plastered across a banner.
Yeah, and it was utterly disgraceful, and that is why I'm making the clear call that do these people realise what this man was involved in? You know, this is like putting up a banner saying that the Southport killer was a hero. This man indiscriminately carried out an act of terror which murdered 5 people in my constituency. And I don't understand how any right-minded thinking person can describe that man as a hero.
That's the DEP MLA, Philip Brett. Here's a Belfast caller. Good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Hi, Stephen. I just wanted to point out the hypocrisy of Philip Brent and other unionist politicians.
Brett.
Sorry. Every year on the Shankill in September, there is a parade honouring Brian Robinson, who murdered Patrick McKenna on the Crumlin Road. Last year, that parade was attended by Orange Lodges, 70 flute bands, bunting, UVF displays, UVF colour parties, and I have never heard the DUP coming out and condemning that march. As a matter of fact, I have never really
heard.
It's
been discussed on this programme.
Oh, yeah, it's been discussed, but it's never been itemised on your programme. You have never made a programme about that parade the following day. It's always mentioned as an afterthought, as like, you know, well, what about the Robinson Parade? Oh, we condemn that. But that is absolute a monstrosity that takes place every September on the Shankill Road, and every unionist politician drop their heads and say nothing. Now, I can understand the hurt of the people, the victims of the Bayado Bar, but does any unionist politician, or do you, understand the hurt of Patrick McKenna's family?
So what do we do about this?
Well, I really don't know the answers, but this what aboutry has got to stop, because everybody had blood in their hands and there was victims from all sides. But it seems to me that unionist politicians only want to cherry pick certain victims.
Thank you for your call this morning. Good morning to you. An important call, 03030 80 55 55. Next on Nolan this morning, concerns were raised this week over the potential expansion of safe access zones or protest buffer areas across the Belfast city centre. Newsletters reported that the Christian Institute had voiced the fears that the protest-free zones could be extended in some areas. So these safe access zones, what are they? They make it illegal to, quote, impede, record, influence or be caused harassment, alarm or distress to anyone within the zone who is attending such a facility concerning an abortion, anyone accompanying them, anyone working at such a facility. They've been introduced at health service locations providing abortion services across Northern Ireland from September 2023. They were established to protect women and girls. Is that what they're doing? The Christian Institute, who opposed the abortion protest exclusion zone, say it's concerned if one of the zones is extended. TV Sammy Morrison with us today. Sammy, good morning to you.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. And Elaine Crory, Women's Resource and Development Agency. Morning, Elaine.
Good morning.
Good morning. Well, Sammy, what's the concern here?
Well, the first thing I would say, Stephen, is that they don't protect women and girls, because the greatest threat that there is to girls in Northern Ireland is abortion. That ends the life of young girls before they have any chance to live their lives in this world. The second point I'd make is that the law is exceedingly ill-defined. You said there, you accurately summarised it and said that it makes it illegal to influence somebody seeking an abortion or who's working in an abortion facility. Influence is not defined anywhere in the legislation.
Is this not about people being protected from abuse and intimidation? When they are going to what is a lawful service in this country?
No, it's not. It's about censorship zones. It's about areas where only one worldview is permitted. And it's about excluding people from being able to articulate lawful opinions. And it's a lawful opinion, Stephen, to say that it is wrong to end the life of a child.
Elaine?
It's a lawful opinion to hold up the sixth commandment and say, thou shalt not kill, on a sign.
Elaine?
And yet there are areas in Northern
Ireland. I mean, look, it's an entirely lawful opinion to have. The issue is where it's expressed and to whom it's expressed. So, I mean, the safe access zones that we have here, and more places are following our lead or have already gone there in advance of us, safe access zones are designed to to leave individual people unimpeded. So in the same way as, you know, you and I have a right to hold any opinion about pretty much anything, it doesn't mean we have a right to impose that on private individuals accessing medical treatment. In the same way as we oppose
Elaine, our opinions on lots of different people all of the time. It's called an open democracy, isn't it? Where you know, people can go into the city centre and they can express their religious beliefs through a loudhailer. They can express their political beliefs. If we close down too much,
not individuals. It's the aiming at individuals that is the issue. A person can stand in a city centre and preach against abortion as long as they're not within a safe access zone and aiming it at an individual who is accessing medical treatment.
That's not true, because these safe access zones, should they be expanded to the area that is being talked about, will cover large sections of the city centre, including the shopping area around Castleport. So people will not be able to stand in the city centre and be able to articulate legitimately held views.
Can I bring this back, Sammy, to you? Are you telling me that we've seen instances? If we take this away from this particular incident, we've seen incidents, particularly in England, I remember doing it in Five Live, where a group of protesters decided to go and stand outside a politician's home and yell abuse as they and their family were leaving their home. Are you equally against politicians being protected if people wanted to protest outside their private home?
I think there are issues whenever you go to the extent of protesting outside a private home, but generally...
So you would support an exclusion zone outside a politician's home?
Generally, Stephen, I am in favour of... Well, if it's peaceful protest, then yes, of course, because we live in a free society.
But is peaceful protest getting a loudhailer and screaming your views?
Well, that
is that peaceful?
That's not what this law entirely covers, Stephen. This law, as a result...
This law's about an exclusion zone.
This law has resulted, in the example of Scotland, has resulted in people in their private homes getting letters advising them that they shouldn't be doing anything in their private homes.
The question I'm asking about a politician, because you're in politics, Sammy, is a fair one, though, isn't it? That if you start to say exclusion zones are bad and let's have a free-for-all, then you can see how in certain circumstances children are affected.
I don't believe that in any instance there should be anywhere in Northern Ireland outside of private property where people have a right to protect their private property. I don't believe there should be any place where there should be a censorship zone enforced by law. Or, Stephen, and this is an important point, if these safe access zones are extended to their maximum circumference, the maximum area that they can be allowed to cover, it would include Presbyterian House, at church house. So in the headquarters of the Presbyterian Church, it will be illegal to pray against abortion.
Does that sound right to you, Elaine? Does that sound fair?
I don't think that is true, that it would be illegal within the building, because that would not be influencing people who are passing by on the way to or from the medical facility.
Samuel is within his right to... saying that people in their private property cannot do anything to influence
I suppose it rather depends on what they're doing within their private property in that instance, and I can't speak to the letters people have received in Scotland.
Okay.
But what I can say is Sammy's objecting to the law, which is a perfectly legitimate thing to do. I think that law was passed very recently, really, by Northern Ireland Assembly, and if he would, you know, seek to repeal it, there is a facility there for him to attempt to do that. I mean, whether he'd be successful or his party would be successful is a different question.
Okay, all right. Elaine, thank you very much. Sammy, before you go this morning, our top story about cleaners, low-paid cleaners, being replaced by robots or their work being replaced. What's the TUV's position on this? Your party's argued for a long time for efficiency in government and government waste. Do you support what is being proposed or not party?
We do need to see efficiency. We need to see the best use of public money. But I do have to question whether that's where I would start. I mean, we have a situation in Northern Ireland, for example, where we're given nearly £2 million a year to the North-South Ministerial Council, which isn't even subject to FOI in Northern Ireland. As a public representative, you can write to the North-South
Ministerial Council. It's part of the Good Friday Agreement.
It is part of the Good Friday Agreement, but it's also part of the institutions that we fund through taxpayers' money, and it's the only institution.
But just to be clear, you're saying this is not
funded by the taxpayer.
Just to be clear about my question, you're saying it's not where you would start, but as a principle, are you agreeable or not to robots replacing human beings in terms of these cleaners?
I'm not agreeable to it because I think there's a lot of practical issues that obviously would jump out at me whenever I think about how that would work.
But aside from the practical issues, because technology will advance, do you support efficiency? And if robots can do it better than humans, so be it.
I'm not a Luddite, and there's a place for technology if it can work more efficiently.
Okay.
But I do see practical problems with this particular
proposal. Sammy, thank you. Be the news. Here's the 10 o'clock news. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for joining us. So the programme for government and the row over it after it didn't appear yesterday. What's happening today? Political correspondent Jane McCormick can tell us. So it's been agreed, has it?
Morning, Jane?
Stephen. Morning.
Yes, it has. We know there was this virtual meeting of ministers at about 8 o'clock this morning, and I got a phone call at about 9:15 to say it was all done and dusted. And I'm actually just heading to Stormont now, where we're expecting a press conference from the First and Deputy First Ministers in the next hour or so. So they've managed it. I suppose it was never going to be anything other than that today, given the major PR disaster that was yesterday. And I think they'll all want to try and put yesterday's embarrassing episode behind them and focus on what is in this document, although, of course, we're not going to actually see it until Monday.
And can they put it behind them, I wonder? Let's remind ourselves what Andrew Muir, our agriculture minister, told Sarah yesterday on Good Morning Ulster about not having enough time to assess the documents.
Like, seriously, all my request was is that the finalised programme for government, the feedback from people in terms that they sent through to the programme for government, the rural impact analysis and also the equality considerations are sent to us in advance of the meeting. And I think that's a perfectly legitimate request.
So, Jane, if we take this to its logical conclusion, does this mean that people like Andrew Muir, Mike Nesbitt, our health minister, they only got all this consultation stuff and they've been speed reading it? Is that what's happened? If yesterday there wasn't enough time and today it's done?
Well, from what I'm told, they got these final papers yesterday afternoon, and had to spend the evening reading through them. I'm told it actually ran to over 200 pages. So some people might say, is that really adequate time to read through all of this? Now, obviously, there's been a long ongoing process through all this. So I suppose in a sense, really, Andrew Muir just wanted time to cross the T's and dot the I's. But I think what you're highlighting points to habits in the past that we know. You think of the last executive where we had Nicola Mallon and Naomi Long coming into executive meetings, not even having had sight of a paper before being asked to sign off on something. So sometimes old habits die hard. I don't think we're in that space where executive ministers from the smaller parties are coming in regularly and being bounced on something. It doesn't happen as often these days, but clearly there's still an element of that when you have the DUP and Sinn Féin in the executive office agreeing among each other and then handing it out to the other parties to say, right, we'll sign up to this. So that there's still a bit of a problem point there for the executive, and I think it's something we will try to ask the First and Deputy First Ministers about.
Where this story will inevitably move to next week is what's in the programme for government, what have they decided are their priorities, and someone at the very heart of the storm machine was saying to me yesterday, listen, you know, no matter what's in it, it very rarely changes how these departments operate. So I wonder, will there be anything in this programme for government where it can be nailed down what they're going to deliver and when they're going to be delivering it?
Well, that's it. You've hit the nail on the head. Now, I am told that there are some targets in this finalised document, what they relate to and what they're actually going to look like. As I've said, we're going to have to wait until Monday because, of course, the convention is that while it's agreed today, it has to go to the Assembly first. MLAs have to be given first sight of it and everything has to be notified through the Speaker, Edwin Putz, so that our executive ministers don't get their knuckles wrapped. So a frustrating few days of a wait before we can even begin to look through this properly and assess what is in it. And don't forget, it's not just the media who will be scrutinising it. You think of all those campaign groups who have been putting pressure on executive departments to focus on their particular issue. For example, Irish language campaigners saying that there was nothing for them in the draft programme for government, but wanting to see something in there concrete this time. So I think once it comes down to it, this is all big picture stuff. I think Stormont sources privately concede it's about having something there, but whether any of it is actually achievable or not is a bigger question.
Given our top story this morning, finally, Jane, can I just confirm I'm talking to you, or is this a robotic representation of you?
No, the AI hasn't infiltrated me yet, you'll be glad to hear. No, and I think it's a really interesting story from David Thompson from the newsletter. And if we get a chance as well, I think it's something that we will try to put to our ministers. I have to say, in the past, if you're a regular visitor to Stormont, you might have noticed as well that they have these electric lawnmowers that go around the estates. So this is obviously something that will be considered, I suppose. But it is one of those bigger issues that affects all of us in terms of how technology is changing and how that impacts jobs.
Thank you, Jane. Morning to you. Political Court, Jim McCormick, 10 past 10, The Nolan Show, the biggest show in the country from the BBC. On air right now, you can listen to us on BBC Sounds. If 9 o'clock in the morning doesn't suit you, maybe you want to listen to it at tea time or night time, BBC Sounds is there. Nolan Live, sitting on the iPlayer for you to watch as well. That went out in BBC One last night at 10:40. And lots of different ways of contacting us. Over a quarter of a million of you now following me on Twitter at Stephen Nolan. Walter's in Mora. Morning, Walter.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
I believe we were talking about the...
What do you mean you believe we were talking about? Were you listening or not?
Oh, I was listening, okay.
Good man.
Talking about the robots.
Yes, don't want you to be listening second hand.
I have two of them.
You what?
I have two robots.
Two robots.
Yes. And they're called Robert and Roberta Romanoff.
You haven't given them names, have you?
Like, I have.
Come on now.
Given them a name. Robert's in the front, Roberta's at the back, and they cut my grass every morning for me.
Every day?
They come out and they just take a wee top off it every day. And they go along quite happily. You don't have to pay them any more money. They just go out, think of getting a tax form for them, you know, maybe they get a bit of money back, you know.
I often wonder if those things work, just, you know, given how fast grass can grow and things. Do they actually work? And where does the grass go when they're cutting it?
It just goes back into the ground again to feed the lawns.
You see, you wouldn't need robots if you do what I do and just get fake grass.
Oh, well, why, there's nothing like the real thing, Stephen.
Yeah. So you're a big fan of these robots, then?
Oh, absolutely. I can't cut the grass myself now, so...
I've got two in the house, I've got to admit.
Does the robots go up and down the carpet? Because I bought white carpet, Walter.
Right.
Which my mother, Big Audrey, told me not to do. So I've got these wee robots and they go out, what is it, twice a week? They go out and suck up all the prawn cocktail crisps off the carpet that I've spilled. And the wee flakes of chocolate.
Yeah.
Sure. Walter, thank you. Morning to you. Brian's in Derry. Morning, Brian.
Yes, good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
I would just like to ask the question, is the robots or technology, it's great to see it, but we've also too got another technology which has been going before robots, which is called laptops. So why does these politicians have to jump on the planes, pollute the air? Why do they have to go to these meetings when they can do them online, when they can meet people?
Well, do you want me to tell you an argument for why?
But you proved it last night. Whenever you spoke to an FDLP man, he was actually sitting in his own house or his own office.
Carl White.
And he spoke to you.
Yeah.
So why can these politicians, they have to go to a meeting and they're only in that meeting for 10, 15, 20 minutes?
Well, can I tell you?
And they're putting on their expenses.
Can I tell you? At least the argument behind it. Do you not think there's something different about being with other human beings? Do you not think you get a little bit more out of being beside someone when you're talking to them and you're making eye contact with them, you're reading their body language? It's more than even body language, is it not?
No.
You don't think
money.
So?
It's money getting spent stupidly. You're turning around saying...
So what do you do? Do you sit in the house and never go out?
No, I go out and I meet people.
Well, why?
Why? I'm on about politicians.
Why don't you
I'm
sit on the phone all day? But why don't you sit on the phone all day and meet nobody?
No, what I'm turning around saying there, Stephen, is you're turning around changing the subject. I'm turning around telling about politicians. I could go out and talk to people. I don't get paid to go out and talk to people.
I'm making the point, Brian.
Politicians who are cutting the low. The low-paid people from the bottom.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there and they're flying off to America. They're flying off to New Dublin. They're flying off over to England. And they're sitting in offices for 10 or 15 minutes talking to somebody. Then they go out and they put on their expenses, which they could have done the same thing by Skyping them, talking to them the same way as you done it last night on your show. You talked to an SDLP man and he wasn't even on your studio.
So what do you think about the cleaners being replaced by the robots?
I think it's a disgrace. I think it's a whole bloody, well, disgrace, because at the end of the day, these people here are out there trying to make a living, trying to get a job. So what do when you pay all these people off? The government then again is under pressure. Well, they have to pay them out benefits. They have to pay them out this. And these people don't want to be going on benefits. These people want to have a job. They want to keep their job. And it gets them out of the house. And as you just says, gets them out of the house. It gets them meeting people. Gets them talking face-to-face with people. It gets them saying hello to politicians. So why can the same thing as they're going to lose their jobs where MPs are sitting in their suits? Would you just point that out? Why are they not being cut back?
So what if...
Why do they have to fly the opposite?
So what if...
Why do they have to take their cars and go down the road?
Okay.
For 10 or
so
20
if,
miles and
what,
they get paid expenses for it?
What if, Brian, what if they were able to show an amount of money that was saved, that was a significant amount of money? And I don't know if it will or won't be. Of course, we haven't seen any of this in terms of the numbers behind this. But what if it did allow, through efficiency of robotic machines, more money to be available for vital services in Northern Ireland? Is it worth it in terms of paying cleaners less and having money to put elsewhere?
And is it worth it too, Stephen, if the politicians, the high up suit men, can actually turn around and save money too, millions of pounds too?
Yeah.
By turning around Skyping people without yeah. having to go down to an office for 10 or 15 minutes and save money that way. No, I do believe that the politicians from the top down should have their expenses cut big time.
Well,
if they're in a job, they took on that job, they do what they have to do. They're not entitled to expenses. They should be cut big time.
Okay.
Secondly,
all right.
They're going to save millions of pounds there rather than having the working class, the young people, The young ones, lower class.
What we're going to ask the finance minister straight after the show today, John O'Dowd. It's his department now. John says nothing to do with his department. You know,
the Department of Finance have locus here in terms of what does the minister think about this happening to the staff. I've said that a number of times on the programme this morning. So what we're going to do is we're going to go around the different departments this morning after the show, and we're going to ask them if they can cite any examples where they're considering robotic machines to replace any of the work of the white-collar workers and the suits. So let's see what they say. Thank you, Brian. Morning to you. Wayne's in Warren Point. Morning, Wayne.
Stephen, we're talking about replacing workers because they'll be efficient, they'll be this.
Yes.
Why not get rid of all the MLAs and put in the artificial intelligence? They'll be organised, efficient, won't make mistakes, won't waste money.
Do you know what?
Won't have to feed them all the time for expensive five-star restaurants up in their building in Stormont, and they won't walk out whenever it suits themselves or spit the dummy out. We will save a complete fortune. The country will be restored back to normal in no time, and we'll have no agents.
You're saying all of this tongue-in-cheek. I actually wonder if in 20, 30 years' time, maybe when we're both dead, whether robots will have a place in politics. And again, it's just fascinating. If you look at how I stood in, the Sphere. I stood last year, I put this on my Twitter feed. If you want to go back and find it, I'll stick it up again. The Sphere's this new building in Las Vegas on the Strip, right? And I stood, and there was a robot not just interacting with me in some type of basic way. The robot was listening to what I was saying, challenging me. I then said to the robot, I challenged the robot, and it tried to get the crowd to turn on me. So this, the AI and the advancement of technology and what it can do and will be able to do in the future is terrifying exciting.
I would agree with you to a degree, because every time you ask the question is, When you see them in supermarkets and there's 10 of them there and they take up 10 jobs, and then you say to people, well, they're taking 10 jobs, where do these 10 people get work? And then after that say, oh, well, there'll always be people. He says, where does all these jobs go to?
Let me ask you this morning. Finally, Wayne, would you prefer an AI robot was presenting the Nolan Show?
I refuse to comment on that at this present moment in time. I would plead the fifth.
Okay, no problem. Thank you, Wayne. Morning to you. Green Party leader Mal O'Hara is with us this morning to talk about the Belfast Glider bus service, Mal. But before we do so, our top story today is about these robots replacing people at Stormont. It's a really important talking point. And, you know, lots of people will be divided in their opinion. What's yours?
Yeah, Stephen, I submitted something to David Thompson in the newsletter yesterday. Look, my party has long supported a universal basic income. We believe that people have inherent worth regardless of whether you've got a job or not. And as the age of automation and AI accelerates, these issues are going to escalate. So more and more jobs are going to be replaced by robots or artificial intelligence, or it'll be under the guise of efficiency. So what we need to do is be prepared for that coming and instead offer people universal basic income, Stephen.
So you're not against it? You're not against robotic machines replacing people at work?
I just want to make sure
their benefits are better if they're made unemployed.
Yeah, I think our society kind of skews. I mean, Stephen, I'm a bit of a geek, and like, look at Star Trek, look at the future, those kind of ideas. We should, you know, if automation, artificial intelligence can do things for us and instead allow humans to be creative, to do art, to do sport, to write poetry, all those kind of things, to advance experiments in science and literature, all those kind of things. That could be the future. But the risk instead is that we end up doing the humdrum jobs and AI takes over the world. So, you know, I think there's a real societal conversation over the next...
Which is why I'm asking you where you stand on it, Mal. Because, look, if we take this story about the cleaners at Stormont, yes, it's looked upon as a menial job, but actually, and my experience, certainly of cleaners that I've met, both in, you know, the company that I have, the BBC where I work, City Beat where I used to work, blah-dy-blah-dy-blah, there's sometimes some of the most salt, you know, really grounded people.
Yeah, I'm married to one, Stephen, and he does it part-time.
And personality and all of that. And so you start to lose some of the fabric of an organisation, do you not, if you start to get rid of, you know, what is perceived to be these unimportant jobs. They're not unimportant jobs. And
no,
those people
not.
Are more real than some of the suits at the top.
Yeah, Stephen. So
it's more than money, in other words. That's what I'm saying.
I'm married to a man who part-time does cleaning, right? So that's one. I wouldn't say it's a menial job. And we learned through the pandemic that those coal-faced jobs, frontline workers are so vital.
I didn't say they were menial. I said they're sometimes perceived as menial.
Perceived as menial, yeah. And that the second point I would make is the other day I went into a coffee shop in City Centre in Belfast, and I had to order through a machine, and I turned and walked out. I want human interaction. And as our mental health as a society is getting worse over recent years, we're having less human connection. And all the longitudinal studies around health and positive mental health are about having interaction and feeling like you have a place in society with other people.
You say, Mal, that you're married to a man. And I'm not being facetious here. It's probably already happened. It's only a matter of time that people are marrying robots. It's only a matter of time.
Well, there's a couple of really interesting Star Trek episodes about artificial intelligence and robotics. Do they have human rights? Do they have consciousness? I think those are a huge, wider philosophical conversation. Stephen, I come on to talk about the gliders.
Yes, I know you did.
And I wasn't prepared for this one, but
I know
I
you
think
did.
It's a really interesting conversation. I would love to talk longer with you on it.
All right. Look, plans to extend Belfast glider bus service to the north and south of the city. They're being scaled back because apparently they're not economically viable. We know that Stormont's Infrastructure Minister gave an update on the public transport project in the Assembly. Liz Kimmins said proposals to extend the plans to Glengormley in the north and Carriduff in the south cannot progress at this time. So what are your thoughts around this?
That huge disappointment, Stephen. You know, I think if we're serious about transforming the city, we know about congestion, we know about the poor air quality and how toxic it is in this city. We know how many hours are lost for productivity, people sitting in traffic jams. Well, the only way to solve that is to get more people on the public transport, and that's what the glider would do. I found it galling that the minister said part of the reason she couldn't extend it to Glengormley was because of congestion. The way to alleviate congestion is to have rapid, frequent, reliable, cheap public transport.
Rapid, frequent and reliable, that doesn't necessarily come from our bus service, no matter what the ads tell you.
Well,
because I hear from people on this programme, it's not rapid because it doesn't turn up.
Well,
sometimes.
I'm a chosen non-driver, and the service is decent, but it could be better. But the reason it's not as good as it should be is because the people who have been in power for 27 years have consistently underfunded public transport. And instead, they put money in the roads. And there's a class element of this. I'm North Belfast. 50% of households in North Belfast don't have access to a car or a van. So we're reliant on good buses, walkability and cycle lanes. And, you know, what I find additionally galling is Alliance and DUP MLAs giving out. They're in government with this minister. They put forward a draft programme for government which committed to roads and airport expansion but didn't talk about public transport. So you can't speak out both sides of your mouth.
Let's hear from
either
the
collective responsibility or not.
I was talking this morning to the DUP MLA, Philip Redd, about this, Mal. Let's have a listen.
Yeah.
Listen, first of all, I do welcome the fact that there's been some progress made by the minister. This party has been a champion for the glider scheme. As a representative of North Belfast, I'm hugely disappointed that the extension to Glengormley is not taking place. But Stephen, what frustrated me most, and still 48 hours later, when the minister made her statement, she cannot tell me or members of the Assembly or people in North Belfast where on earth this bus is now going to stop. And that is where my major frustration has been. The minister said that she didn't have that basic detail to hand, and we're now 48 hours later, and I'm still waiting an answer to that question.
And how come it's suddenly not economically viable? How was that not scoped out at the beginning?
I think it was clear 2 years ago in October 2022 when Minister O'Dowd, the then Infrastructure Minister, this was the direction of travel by the department. I think Sinn Féin were concerned that at any election they didn't want the SC to make a bad decision and kick this can down the road. So I think it's been clear for a number of years that there was financial difficulties with this scheme, and they've now finally admitted to the fact that they don't have a plan.
Is the term not economically viable, is that a euphemism for people don't want to use it, not enough people want it?
So when challenged on that, the Minister then went on to say there wasn't enough funding in the end. She then made an issue of congestion in Glengormley, though if we're wanting to combat congestion, having public transport would be the best answer to trying to help clear that congestion. So the statement from the Minister was confused. I understand this is her first public statement that she's been made and taking questions on the issue. So I'm hoping that we get a bit more clarity from the department in the coming days, because clearly the Minister wasn't quite sure of the detail that she was discussing.
Okay. Philip, thanks very much indeed. Thanks for coming on this morning. Well, the department have been in touch with us. We asked them, Mal, where this glider stop's going to terminate in both North Belfast, South Belfast. And they say the Northway runs along the Antrim Road corridor from the existing G1, G2 network of Belfast City Hall to Donegal Place, Royal Avenue, Donegal Street, Clifton Street, Carlisle Circus, round about Antrim Road. There is a proposed park and ride interchange facility on the O'Neill Road. Where would that go on the O'Neill Road? That's just above the zoo, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's towards the cemetery at Carmelny there, and it's a big, wide, sweeping road. But, Stephen, you know, these are just political decisions that are being made by people who've been in power for 27 years. They've underfunded public transport. And what I would say is watch over the next few months how much money, hundreds of millions, this minister will throw towards roads and road improvements rather than invest properly in the All-Island Rail Review, Stephen. The future should be rail, buses, public transport, the cycle network. Phase one was meant to be complete in the city of Belfast by 2025. And it hasn't even started yet. That's the lack of ambition. And just be cautious of those MLAs who are in government and then critiquing their own government ministers. What happened to collective responsibility? And if you've signed off a programme for government that commits to roads and airports and says nothing about public transport, don't dare speak out the other side of your mouth.
Where do you think they could get the money from? Should they put fares up?
No, Stephen, actually, they should change
more revenue.
They should change the funding model, and that's part of the problem here, is that TransLink is run almost like a private business because approximately 70% of its income is from
maybe
fares.
Start charging cyclists some type of bike tax, and that might add into the pot.
Stephen, we did our submission to the programme for government, and we're not in the executive, we're currently not in the assembly, but it's about saying, have some imagination or innovation about raising revenue here. I mean, we've heard the finance minister talk about rates. We said that 5-10 years ago, and finally they're catching up and they still can't even move on it.
All right.
Like, come on and be serious about governance and government here.
Thank you, Mal. All the very best. Thanks, everyone, for listening today. That's another biggest show in the country. We'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Have a good day, everyone. And thanks for listening. Here comes Connor.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet @StephenNolan.